Welcome to Two Teas in a Pod. I'm Kate Diaz, a Manchester math teacher and elected president of CEA, the Connecticut Education Association. We are Connecticut's largest teachers union, representing tens of thousands of professional educators across the state.
And I'm Jocelyn Delancey, a fifth grade teacher in Darien, elected vice president of CEA and president of CEF, the Connecticut Education Foundation, CEA's charitable arm.
In every episode, you'll hear thought-provoking interviews, as well as actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your daily life. We'll have stimulating discussions to help you become a more informed and effective educator and advocate for your students and the teaching profession.
Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's jump right into Two Teas in a Pod.
All righty. Well, we are so lucky today here, Jocelyn. We have my good friend and legislator, Jeff Curry, who, yes, does represent my district, but most significantly, he has been recently appointed the chair of the Education Committee. So we have done our due diligence. We have trapped him in a room with us. We will not let him leave until he answers all of our burning questions about education. So strap in. This is going to be a fun time.
Yeah, and we are just so excited to have such a true advocate for education, really in a space where we can make some positive changes this year. So congratulations, and thank you for doing that important work.
Thank you, and I really appreciate you having me.
Well, this is going to be fun. So listen, we've talked a lot about how this is the session. Education needs to be a top priority. We've certainly done our part to say, put this out there as a hot button issue. 74% of our people are talking about, hey, maybe there's another way I could make money. We know that voters are looking at it saying, listen, 90% of us are really on board with elevating pay, getting us in line with comparable professions. And all of that is well and good. But what does that mean legislatively?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. We are at a pivotal moment right now for education in the state of Connecticut and across the country, to be honest. We are still working our way out of COVID, and people talk about a lot of new normals. And, you know, first of all, none of this should be normal, but what it should be is a time where we are learning from where we were and what can be better. And at this point, it's almost like everything can be better. And like you
so
said, that starts with you and your members and the work that they're doing inside the classroom. And the true value of what comes with that profession. And like you said, it is a profession. You are all highly educated individuals who were entrusted to provide that high quality learning experience every day for every child. And so there has to be a level of respect that also comes back to education. And, you know, I think that's coming upon us on the committee and the legislators, but also you and your members and parents at home to really be voicing that loudly. You know, we have an administration who hasn't necessarily focused on education during his first term. And so we want to help educate him and let him know why it's so important that right now education is at that moment where we can be so transformative and going to mean so much to the kids around the state.
And I think that, you know, really that concept of transformative is really powerful because that does a couple of things, right? It elevates sort of the dialogue around education, what is our state value associated with education. And it reminds people that this is a profession that is worth going into. Because as we start to look at public education, it only works if we have great educators. And we have a dwindling supply and a highly, highly competitive workplace where people have lots and lots of choices. So we need to draw those great educators back to the table, say, no. This is a good place to work.
And it's not shocking that your pipelines are drying up. I mean, if I was a student right now sitting in a classroom in Bridgeport, half of the students probably have IEPs and need one-on-ones, but there's no support staff there. Why would I want to become a teacher when I see the level of stress that you all are under?
Right.
Like, that is just absurd. So, you know, if we can do our part to help be able to provide the additional resources and funding and just overall respect and deference to you as professionals, then we've succeeded in what we're doing.
So what are you looking to accomplish? What is your what is the end of a successful session for Jeff Curry?
Still breathing, first and foremost.
Likewise, I share a similar goal, Jeff.
You know, right now, I think this particular legislative session, we're really prioritizing being able to provide you all with the resources you need. And a lot of times that comes down to funding.
Absolutely.
And so education funding is first and foremost, because you won't be able to do a lot of the things that you want and need to be doing in your classrooms unless you have that support financially. Now, we don't pretend to think that funding and, you know, putting more money into this is going to solve the problem. It's just a step in the right direction. I think when it comes to your profession, we really haven't seen a lot of the reform around certifications and way in which people become teachers. So we want to just blow that up. Let's throw it all out and start completely over. I think we have a lot of great people around the table already who are looking to do that work. And so hopefully we're able to accomplish something in that arena. And then just overall helping give you all a voice when it comes to what you do on a daily basis. Successful legislative session isn't necessarily around legislation itself. It's a lot of times the messaging that comes out of the conversations that we're having. Mm-hmm. So this is just one of what I hope to be leading many successful legislative sessions as the Education Committee co-chair.
I think you bring up some really key points. Money matters. And I think anytime we suggest that it's sort of, teachers don't love to talk about money. It's not our favorite topic because we really don't do the work because of the pay. We get paid because of the work. But I think what's become incumbent upon us to talk about is that if we are not dedicating and allocating resources specifically to things like teacher pay and to lowering class sizes, that those things don't happen sort of altruistically.
Absolutely.
So it's good to hear that we're not afraid to dive in and talk about money.
Well, yeah, and you have to, and I apologize for interrupting, but you know, the disparity we have in those wages from neighboring towns alone, I mean, it's like a $40,000 gap between when you're at your higher step in town A and town B. Mm-hmm. So why would you stay in town B? And town B is likely the one that needs the most help.
Correct.
With the most under-resourced or under-resourced children. So, you know, if we can have that conversation and see what ways we can come at that. I mean, I think there's been other states who have kind of set a floor for teacher compensation.
Yeah, Maryland just went to 60,000.
Right.
Yep. And as we sit here and have that conversation, it's important because that's who we're competing with in terms of draw.
Well, and I think one of the things that we really want to focus on is why do teachers want to come to Connecticut, right? We have educators across the state, and thinking about the messaging of how do we make Connecticut the destination state for educators? Because if we have that investment in our strong public schools, that's what draws people in. An investment in strong public schools isn't just in the schools and the educators and the kids. It's in the entire community. And I think that's when you say it's the messaging that comes out of it. When our legislature kind of focuses on a single topic and says, this is what matters and this is important, it sends that message that we care about our public schools. We care about our public educators. So ensuring funding is one crucial element. But the other thing that you mentioned is the respect for the profession and the people involved. And I think as we go through this session, I'm excited to see some of the things that are coming down the pipe because they are things that our teachers can say, you're hearing us, you care about us, we matter. And I think that that's a big part of some of the agenda that you have on and that we have on the table. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think part of that messaging goes well beyond everybody under the education umbrella. That's why we've opened up this conversation. We're bringing business leaders. We're going to those, you know, Black and Deckers, the Hartford Hospitals, the EBs. They have to be part of the education conversation because those are the people who are going to be staffing the positions that they have currently open or open in the future. And so if you want to be able to attract the teachers to Connecticut and say, this is why you want to be here, they want to see partnership on every part of what we do here in the state. So, yeah,
well, it's interesting you mentioned that because I went to an economic event last week and the number of people that talked about education because of the workforce challenges and how it's important. It was interesting to hear business people say we have to pay teachers. We have to build public education systems. We have to make this an investment place. And they have some really creative ideas too. So I was excited to hear the conversation. It wasn't about, well, we can't afford to, or we can't do this, or we can't do that.
They can't afford not to.
That was where the conversation really went. And it was about how do we build partnerships that are high value. And there was a real recognition that if we want to shift sort of the economic profile, the workforce profile, that has to be done in tandem and in conjunction with public schools because that's where you can harness the most energy on that. So it was fun to hear other people narrate some of the issues that we're talking about and unusual partners, right? Because that's where big change can happen is when you have a lot of people from different backgrounds kind of saying, oh no, this is important. I agree.
Welcome to the Ed Party.
I know,
right? Come on.
I know, and I'm hopeful. You know, it sounds like the governor is nodding towards these issues. I've heard him mention it a couple of times. Maybe we'll send him this podcast, you know, and say, Governor, come on board.
Yeah, you're having fun, Gov.
And I
bring your belt.
Bring your belt. And I think that there's momentum, but we have to kind of see this through. I know Jocelyn and our members and I we always talk about. It's important that this be all the time an issue. where we're constantly talking to our legislators. So I anticipate a thoroughly annoying amount of contact among our members and the legislature this session, which we're very excited to help facilitate.
And you have a lot more legislators to talk to, especially in the Education Committee. We are now the third largest committee after Appropriations and Finance. So that in and of itself should really tell people where we're prioritizing things this year.
So tell us a little bit about that, because you got to remember, you know, those of us on the outside of the legislature don't actually know what that means.
Right. So education is considered one of our A committees, and so that is already one of our larger. But our appropriations and our finance committees, which are essentially take care of all of our money, our budgeting, our taxing, how we spend, they always have 50 plus members, and then usually judiciary comes in behind that. Mm-hmm. I've seen pictures up on the wall outside of my office of education committee sometimes having like 18, 20 members.
Wow.
But to have 45 and be the third largest, I mean, says everything that anybody needs to know about where education is right now.
That's
and
amazing.
That everyone recognizes this is the moment. And if we are not going to seize on that moment, then none of us should be doing this job.
Couldn't agree more. And I'm excited. I think that embedded in challenges, which is kind of where we are at, right? We're sort of this embattled moment where we've endured a pandemic that has forever changed our classrooms, not necessarily all for the bad. You know, one of the things I know we talked a lot about when sort of the pandemic even started was that schools didn't always work for everyone. So we would be fools to not take advantage of this moment to say, okay, we have had this huge disruption. As we rebuild, how do we rebuild so that we really are doing better by everyone? But boy, does that come with growing pains and challenges. And, you know, we are seeing a return to some challenging behaviors in the classrooms and really some struggles with trying to facilitate, you know, how do we help kids who are struggling? And so last session, we talked a lot about mental health. And I think this session, we're really trying to dive into how else do we build supportive, you know, really valuable education communities? And I know we've talked a lot about looking at Jocelyn's favorite topic, the play legislation. That's her, one of her brainchild.
Definitely is.
And we have a really strong cadre of educators that worked on putting that together as building a platform to say, we learn when we play and that there's high value to that. And as we kind of back away from those integrated experiences, we're really harming kids. And we need to start doing right by these kids and build those back. I think hand-holding that is my favorite topic, which is standardized assessment. We're hoping that there at least out of this session comes an audit of standardized testing in terms of financial impact and our impact, because I think we don't necessarily have a firm grasp on the costs to opportunity as well as financially. And that's a good place to start that conversation.
Yeah, and I get super frustrated around these assessments because, you know, it's often what residents or non-residents are judging a community by when
Correct.
They're deciding to stay or move into. And we all know that those SBAC scores are not a true representation of what is happening in that classroom. And if you were to take that and compare those to progressive monitoring tests, oftentimes you will see a huge disparity between the Yep. two of those because you're actually getting what's happening in real time with those PMTs.
Well, and I think it's important for people to recognize that when we want to look at standardized assessments and how we utilize them, the importance of them, the weight that we put on them, we're not looking to excuse accountability. And I think that that's a really important piece of this, right? We want to make sure that we are doing right by our students, that they're learning and growing, but this measure isn't always the best measure. And we really need to take a break and say, what's working? And what are we using our time for? When I have a fifth grade class, and in a high-performing district who happens to do consistently well on SBAC, and I have to spend, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 weeks sometimes in test prep, even though they don't really call it test prep. They give it some jazzy name that sounds really benign, but it isn't. That's 4 weeks of instructional time. And then when we actually take the SBAC, it's like 10 days of instruction where we are just assessing. And then I don't get that information until September. Those kids are long gone from my classroom. I can't use that information for that group. I can use it for my next group, but that's a totally different group of children right. with different needs and a different learning style. So
6 months later.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So it's not necessarily the best practice to really get a sense of what are we doing and is this the right thing for our kids? And sometimes high performing districts look really good on paper, but you know, then they have like the highest rate of student suicide or something like that, which, you know, is that really a healthy high performing district if that's kind of where some of our students are? So
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, accountability, it's accountability for so many things. And I'm glad you brought up like the high rates of suicide and obviously the mental health legislation that we passed last year. That holistic approach to that student, just that has to be where we attack all of these issues. It's not mm-hmm. just successful test scores. It's not just, people graduating and becoming, you know, quality members of society and all that. It's everything that leads up to that. And so I'm hoping that we're going to take a look at overall climate policies. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a group that's working on a lot of that work right now through the SEL Collaborative.
Well, I'm on that group.
And I have to say, all these subgroups and, you know, your membership and everybody else who's part of these conversations help to make our job as legislators so much easier. We come into this space not as educators for the most part.
Right.
We are just average citizens who decided to step up and run for office. Mm-hmm. And so we rely solely upon you all to be able to educate us on why we should be doing what we're doing or not doing sometimes what we shouldn't be doing. But I just want to, before we end at some point, just make sure that I say thank you to all of you and the others who are working on behalf your behalf.
Well, I think we really try and get our members motivated to know that you don't have to be an expert in everything to talk to your legislator. You have to know what your experience is. And our teachers often feel like, oh, I can't talk about, you know, the whole scope. And we really try and emphasize the most important thing you can do is relay your experience, because that's the lived experience that's very real and honest. And that's sort of a good benchmark for what's going on, because your personal experience in a classroom matters. And what you're doing on a day-to-day basis is really informative. And so I think, you know, it's good for people to hear legislators, because they also, you got to love teachers. They'll also say, well, I don't want to bother them.
Bother me every day. I have zero boundaries.
We take that invitation.
and we can't sit back and argue. Unless you're an educator talking to another educator, I'm in no position to tell you that what you're telling me is your truth and your experience is wrong.
Right.
And just because you went to school for 12 years, listen up, folks, doesn't make you an expert in education.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
We endorse that sentiment.
Yes.
No, and you know, it's not that lots of voices in education won't strengthen it, because absolutely, we work with parent groups, we work with advocates, we certainly know that not one person can know everything. But I do think we want definitely our time at the table to speak to our issues as experts. Teachers get into the field because they want to help other people's children. And sometimes that basic understanding gets lost. We build a level of expertise, of understanding. We participate in continuous education, really for one sole purpose, and that is to help other people's children. And so there is an enormous investment in making sure our systems are supportive, our structures, our spaces are built as spaces that really develop young people in a positive, positive way. And I think we can really make big strides this session, but I think we're going to need some serious commitments from all of our stakeholders to say, we want strong public schools, and to do that, and it's going to feel counterintuitive in some spaces, we have to back off. Like, that's kind of the interesting piece of the puzzle, is oftentimes people are diving in and saying, well, you know, we want to tell everybody more structure, more things to do. And in reality, we need to make space for our educators to use their expertise the most positive way that they can.
Well, and I think that we're actually making some really good strides. I would be remiss if I didn't recognize the work that we've been doing with teacher evaluation,
right,
and the stakeholder group that's involved in the Evaluation and Support Council. That group has really worked together to ensure that we are putting forward a plan that is a growth model and supportive, and that's a true showing of when multiple stakeholders get together with the best interest of education in mind, that we can really come up with some powerful things. We will need some legislative changes on that.
We're here for it.
But you know, it'll be a good model to kind of think about as we dive into teacher certification, which, before people panic, we're not trying to go the way of who needs certification. We're trying to go the way of 1998 was the last time we really looked at it. Maybe things have changed and evolved.
I graduated the year before that, so that should tell you something.
And I graduated the year after that. So. And that was high school, by the way, not college.
Okay. Yes, well, and I'm not talking about it. So I'm just going to say I remember 1998. But I think that we're really in a good place to talk about being innovative and as a real jumpstart to the profession. So I'm cautiously optimistic, because I always am. And, you know, we do know that not everybody feels the same way We're aware of legislation that's, you know, trying to take away our 30-minute lunch, and we're not happy about that. And we're aware that there are other pieces of legislation that are maybe don't feel as supportive as they hopefully didn't intend them to come across that way. But we will certainly be happy to advocate on behalf of our members in the session as it comes.
Yeah, and I would be remiss if I did not thank CEA for the group that you've recently created with your LGBTQ teachers and the conversations that I hope that we are going to be having with them in the future. You know, legislation came out that would not allow you to address students by Correct. Their pronouns, and to not value students and not value children, there's a real problem with that. And so it's really nice to know that you are all offering a space, not only for your own teachers, but hopefully for children as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're very excited. Well, thank you, Representative Curry, for joining us. We really appreciate your efforts. We are excited to be partners in this work with you, and we'll look forward to bringing you back. And maybe we need to do an after-hours edition.
I think we do. An after-hours edition, and then one at the end of the session where we celebrate all of our significant gains to public education.
Where we're still breathing.
Where we're still breathing. Thank you so much, and take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We want to thank all of our members for all you do and for listening to the latest edition of Two Teas in a Pod.
For more education talk, subscribe to Two Teas in a Pod and find us at cea.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like what you heard? Share a podcast with your friends and colleagues and spread the word, because we are
stronger together.